It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
The recent closing of the Tropicana reminded me of another great hotel and a fascinating history that also was closed and imploded, the Dunes. While I was able to watch the implosion of the Dunes from the roof of Caesar's Palace, thanks to Phil Cooper, I couldn't help thinking of its history and famous and notorious owners, guests, and entertainers. Well, who better to talk about the Dunes than my guest, Gino Minari? He learned the casino business from the inside, working at the Dunes Casino for over 8 years, and he's the author of The Dunes Hotel and Casino, The Mob, The Connections, The Stories. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Gino, go to GinoMinari.com, M-U-N-A-R-I, GinoMinari.com. Gino, along with four other eyewitnesses to gaming history, Dr. David G. Schwartz, Mark Hall Patton, Susie Isaacs, and Tom McAvoy, will participate in the Meet & Greet Gaming Education Series at the Casino Collectibles Association's 31st Annual Casino Chip and Collectibles Show, June 13th through the 15th at South Point Hotel and Casino. For more information about the show and the association, go to ccgtcc.com. That's ccgtcc.com. And Gino, welcome to the show.
Ira, thanks for asking me to come on. I haven't spoken to you in a lot of years.
True. We go back a ways. And I think this is the longest introduction ever on the history of the show. But I wanted to set the stage because you have a fascinating background. I want to get into it before we talk about the book and also what you're going to be doing at the show. But how did you get involved in the gaming industry? Because your background also includes magic.
Well, I moved here in 1964 to go to UNLV. And I went there for 6 months, didn't like it. I had a job at the Sahara Hotel. I had a cousin who was one of the original owners and builders of the Sahara, along with a club bingo with Milton Perel. It came together from Montana. Milton Perel was the president and the boss of the Sahara. I got a job as a busboy there in the dealer's room, and the dealers taught me how to deal chips with coffee saucers. And I was around these guys. I was fascinated by the business. So my cousin left the Sahara in about 66, and he opened his own place downtown called Frank Skivo's California Club, which is right at First and Fremont, and now it's part of the Golden Nugget. I went to work. I broke in craps, blackjack, roulette, and slots, and he got to do a lot of things, and that's how it started.
So how did you end up at the Dunes?
That's a good story. You know, everybody at the California Club that was down there with me, They went with Jimmy Newman and Alex Shoofy to the Flamingo Hotel. Kerkorian bought the Flamingo as a pre-runner to the International. So he brought his whole crew out there. So I figured, you know, I'm about ready to move to a better place to deal, make a little more money. I went out to the Flamingo, and I asked Bud Haynes, who was the casino shift manager at the Sahara and the Flamingo, to give me a tryout, an audition, they call it. So I went on the table, and he says, "You're not ready yet." So I walked outside, and I thought I was. I walked outside, and there's the Dune sign. I said, "You know what? I know a guy over there from the airport when I used to go hang out at the airport. I'm going to go see if he's working. I want to ask him for an audition." I went there, I auditioned, and I was hired on the spot. And I never looked back.
Amazing. And then you got into magic. So I also know you're from the magic world. So when did you start with magic? And you ran the Houdini magic shops for a long time.
When I was a young kid, I learned magic, 6-7 years old. My mother and her sister worked for the guy that owned Hollywood Magic. And they made some things for him, kind of cottage industry. And I liked it. You know, it was a lot of fun. And I just kept it as a hobby. And it was also, you handled cards, and it was more like gambling than anything I'd ever known. And so I kind of learned the sleights and learned all the moves, you might say, and I learned how to protect the games. And some of the magic helped me to do that. And it was just a great hobby. And then when I left the, by the way, I left the San Remo. I got fired there, by the way, and crazy situation, but all honesty, but it was rehired as an entertainer in their showroom. Mr. Izumi, the owner, he hired me back to do a magic show. That's a true story. No,
only in Las Vegas. I love
only
it.
In Las Vegas.
I have always enjoyed magic. I have never claimed to be not even a good amateur magician. I work with my French drop with Lance Burton, and he showed me how to do it. I kept practicing, and I enjoyed doing it to civilians, but it's, you know, I couldn't do it in front of a professional magician. I'd be laughed out of town.
I've got a trick for you. You can do over the radio. I'm going to send it to you.
That would be a good one, actually. Yeah,
it's a great one. It's. I don't even know how it works. If it works.
Oh, you want to do it now?
Oh no.
Now, how did you decide to write the book on the dunes? Because it, as I mentioned in the opening, it's a fascinating property because it has all these notorious and infamous and interesting characters, the owners, the players, the entertainers, just the history of the place. How did you decide to do it? How did you do the research?
It was one of the first books that was ever done on a hotel directly. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff about Las Vegas and the hotels, but, you know, there were so many stories and things that I saw at the dunes. I said, these have to be memorialized. I didn't want them to just be gone. And, you know, I tried to contact the gaming control board and I got zero help. Basically.
Yeah. That surprised me. Cause in the book you write about that where you wanted information about people that are no longer or even alive.
Yeah. That's, you know, there was one guy I wanted information about who opened the Moulin Rouge. It was one of the owners there. And then he was denied a license. And then he became the Baccarat manager at Caesar's Palace. And they said they didn't have any information on him. Well, where's all the rec? I mean, that stuff should be available to historians and to anybody who's interested. And I understand private information like phone numbers, socials, and, you know, things like that. But but about the history in your gaming business, why should that be a secret? I don't understand that.
And isn't that more public information anyway that would come out? Well, because it
is if you're at the actual meeting. That's, of course, is all public. But the state of Nevada has a law against revealing anything about a gaming applicant or licensee in their file. They can't even give you a picture of one. And that's ridiculous, in my opinion.
Okay, so it's not just that the agencies have some administrative rule. It's actually a law.
State law. Yeah.
Wow, interesting.
In fact, well, I think I quoted that in the book.
Do you want to? Are you going to work to change it, or are you too busy doing anything else?
I would like to. I even proposed to one of the gaming commissioners at the time to do a joint venture. I would be happy to make a database, you know, and manage it, and maybe even they could make some money off of it by selling it very inexpensively. The information, you know, there's people all over the world who'd want to know about the guys that did gaming. For instance, you know, Ed Torres was a legendary operator of the Riviera Hotel, and he was at the Fremont downtown, and, you know, he was involved in a lot of, you know, interesting issues. You know, I don't want to paint everything, you know, I'm not putting the blame on anybody, but he was an interesting guy, but he had a notorious reputation. He would stand in the slot department, spy on his people, you know, and, you know, he'd go by a slot machine and rub his finger on it and there'd be dust on it. He'd go crazy. He'd want to ball the slot manager out. You know, he was an interesting guy. So, but I wanted some information on him. I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find a picture of him. You try to find a picture on the internet of Edward Torres, owner of the Fremont and the Riviera hotels. You won't find one.
Have you checked the Las Vegas News Bureau when they have a photo of him?
They may. He didn't let many people take his photo.
Oh, that could explain one of the issues. Okay. Because a lot of times when they had functions at hotels, the News Bureau would be there to take the picture. And
correct. They had some good stuff. Yeah. And, you know, so then I have a very close acquaintance. They were Maury and Ivan Yeager. And they were two. Maury ran the MGM for Kerkorian. He ran the gaming, all the gaming, and he was at the Stardust when the mob owned it, and not the mob that got in trouble, but the mob before that. And his his brother Ivan, who was a dealer at the Dunes, his wife Bernice, she was the number one assistant to the people that ran the Continental Hotel on Paradise and Flamingo. Remember that old hotel?
Yes, I do. Yes.
But she used to be Ed Torres's personal secretary, and she gave me a file that's priceless. And I may be working on something like that down the road, and you know, putting it together, maybe make a website of all right. the different hotels. And that's what I'd like to do.
On your Dunes book, there are so many characters in it. Who was the most interesting to you?
Well, that would be depends on what department, but I guess when I went into the Baccarat pit, which was another thing, I want to tell you about that just for a second. I was dealing at the Dunes. I'm 6 months in the 21 pit, and my friend, who's a musician, and he had a chance to get into the Baccarat at the Flamingo. He got a layout, and he said, come on over. Why don't you learn the game? So we're in his garage. My dad made him a table for it, and we practiced. And we got fairly decent. We thought we would be good enough to deal. We'd go over to the Sands, and the guy at the Sands would come up to us on the rail, and he'd say, what are you guys looking at? So they kind of didn't want us to watch the game, to learn it. But we finally learned it. So, you know, at the Dunes, you'd watch the bosses all the time. If they were in a good mood, you knew that everything was fine. If they were in a bad mood, you stayed away from them, right? In fact, in the 21 pit, they had a secret code. It was Paco, the Cubans, a lot of Cubans worked there. And one of the Cuban dealers ahead of you on the table would turn around and kind of cough and say, Paco, that means be on your best behavior. The boss is coming, the big boss. And Sid Wyman, who was a largesse, he was a 350-pound guy. They called him Paco Grande. I mean, that was a big boss, right? So I'm learning Baccarat, and I see the bosses are in a good mood one night on my break, 21 break. I'm going to my dealer's room. I said, I'm going to go ask Mr. Duckworth if I can just go over there in the Baccarat pit and work for free for a couple of hours. I walk up to him, and this took every bit of guts in my body to do this. I was terribly, extremely frightened to do this, you know, intimidated. And I walked up to him. I said, Mr. Duckworth, I've been learning Baccarat, and I wanted to know if there's any chance I could go over there in the Baccarat and just practice for free. Without me even finishing my sentence, he says, get yourself two tuxedos. You start tomorrow night. I said, wait a minute. I don't even know. And he walked away from me and left me standing there. That was it. So the next day I got a tuxedo. I didn't get two. And I started to work.
And now, was this a rented tuxedo or did you buy one?
I bought one. Luckily bought one fairly inexpensively.
Right.
But I was absolutely like petrified. I mean, all the guys, they looked at me like, where did you come from? And I was the youngest dealer in the place. All of them were like 35 and 45 and 55 and up. There was no young dealers in that pit. And that was it.
So once he said it, he remembered it and he put the word out. So when you showed up, they knew why you were there?
Well, they didn't know. He didn't say nothing to anybody. He said, I sent you a new dealer. But anyway, you asked me who was the most memorable guy.
Right.
Well, George Duckworth was number one. He was a guy that was a casino manager, vice president. And his father was Charlie Cupy Rich, who was Sid Wyman's partner. They were partners in St. Louis. They used the Western Union Telegraph Company.
I have to tell you, that was a fascinating part in your book. I had no, as much as I thought I knew, I didn't know this, that they actually used Western Union to place bets.
Yeah, they paid the agents a commission.
Amazing.
I mean, they basically bought their business, you know, and they sent them gifts, you know, and it was an interesting situation. And anyway, that's where Charlie Rich, Yuppie, who was about 5'5", met Cary Grant. And they became lifelong friends till the day that Scoopy died. And I remember meeting Mr. Grant in the Baccarat pit. One of the other guys knew him. But so George Duckworth was one. And Irwin Gordon was another one. An unbelievable bookmaker who did time in Terre Haute, Indiana, for the Dunes' senior biggest partner, Sid Wyman. And then, of course, at the Dunes, they did have a bookmaking operation up in one of the rooms. And they finally got arrested for it. And that was kind of the end of those days of that crew. But Dave Goldberg was another great guy who was right along with him. He was he got out of jail and they put him to work in the Baccarat pit. And he was, He knew all those guys. He knew Tony Giordano from St. Louis. They knew all every guy that was connected to gambling in the mob.
Yeah. So in those days, you didn't have to worry about dealing with the human resources department.
What was that? Yeah, you're right. What was that? We didn't even have one, basically.
Right, exactly. Well, it was originally called personnel department, then it became human resources. But in those days, you just put the guys there and they were there. There's another one you mentioned in there, which was fascinating. The real Las Vegas godfather, Jimmy Blue Eyes. Tell us about him.
Yeah, let me tell you about that. I have a guy that I knew, and I'm not going to disclose the name here, unless it's in the book, and I don't remember if I put his name, but out of privacy. He was a guy that was the number one guy that worked for Kerkorian. He worked for the Desert Inn Hotel, number one guy.
For our listeners and viewers, Kirk Kerkorian.
Kirk Kerkorian, yeah. He worked for the management company that operated the when they built the first MGM Grand on the corner of Flamingo and Tropicana and Strip. And he was also across the street when they built the other MGM Grand across the street. That was on Flamingo. The later one was on Flamingo. The one with... No, I got it backwards.
You have it reversed, right.
Yeah, right. They made the first one on Tropicana, then they made the other one on Flamingo. Well, he took a liking to me for, and I have no idea why. He treated me like a son. And I was introduced to him by Maury Yeager, and he loved magic. And, you know, so he'd come by my store when I had my stores, and I'd show him a few things. And he never forgot our friendship. And so... he'd invited me to dinner every single week with him and Maury. And he'd tell me stories, stuff that I can't repeat here, only out of privacy reasons, nothing bad. But he was a great guy. But he told me the real godfather in town was Jimmy Blue Eyes. He was Lansky's best friend, Meyer Lansky's best friend. And they kind of shared a couple of common hobbies. One of them was maybe reading and getting good books. And he was the guy that everybody went to. He's the one that got things done for Lansky. And he's a very interesting guy. And that was the guy that they never talk about him at the mob museum. Kind of like they skim over it. They only talk about, it seems like, Spilotro and those guys. And I'm not taking anything away from the mob museum. It's great. Jeff has done a great job there. But there's so much of the real story that has not been told in Las Vegas. And maybe down the way, that'll be my next attempt.
That'd be a great book, if you could do it. How long did it take you to write the Dunes book?
3 years. About 3 years.
And what did you find, because you mentioned earlier you weren't able to get certain information or data from the gaming regulators, you had to go elsewhere to get stuff. How did you find the material that you needed to find?
Interviews with people who were still alive, newspaper articles. You'd be surprised what's available to you if you just do some research.
Mm-hmm. The book is called The Dunes Hotel and Casino, The Mob, The Connections, The Stories.
Yeah, I have about 400 footnotes in there. And I didn't print anything that I couldn't verify. And unless somebody personally like you told me a story, I'd only have you for the verification.
Right.
But that was some of the stuff, you know. And I found that I learned so much by doing the book. And I put two and two together, and all of a sudden I went, oh, wow, you know.
Because your background is not in writing books, so that's why it was interesting that you decided to.
Well, remember, I used to write for the L.A. Herald Examiner.
Right.
I wrote the gambling column, and I'll never forget when I was in high school, you know, I didn't do great in literature, but when I went to college, I got really great grades. And so I decided to perfect that, you know, not to be the best, but just to be able to use that, because I thought I could tell a story and I had good ideas. I just wanted to put them on paper so they were coherent. So I took a lot of literature at UNLV when I did go there.
Right. But a book is much more of a long form than writing a column or writing a feature.
It is. It's a lot of narrative. And, you can't just state a fact without having a footnote. Unless you want to do a predicted probability that if this happened and that happened, it's probable that this happened. And I did a little bit of that, but I also said so when I wrote that in the book.
Did you get any blowback from the book? In other words, something that you wrote about somebody, maybe they're not alive, but one of their relatives contacted you and said, well, I disagree with your assessment of my father, my uncle, my grandfather, whatever.
Not one, believe it or not. And except for the one guy who said, why didn't you mention me a few more times? No, I never got any blowback. And you know what I was worried about? I was worried about maybe getting sued. You know, I think, you know, maybe I made a mistake, you know, here and there. And I made a few errors in the first edition that have to be corrected. They're not big errors. No one's ever called me on them, but there's a couple of errors there.
But so you spotted it after the fact.
You know, you spot it after reading it and reading it and reading it. You say, how did I miss that? How did the editors of the publishing company do that also, you know?
Yeah. What was the significance from your point of view, having written the book on the dunes, what was your take on the significance of the dunes in the larger landscape of Las Vegas, its place in history, in Las Vegas history, its place on the Las Vegas Strip? What's your take?
Well, first of all, it was one of the biggest high rises in Las Vegas. You know, the Riviera had a little high rise, but it wasn't anywhere near the dunes. It's 24 stories. The dunes had 1,000 rooms in the beginning. Oh, not in the beginning, but when they got rolling in the 60s, and they had everything. They had, it was a city within a city. They had the finest food, Sultan's Table, Dome of the Sea, Top of the Strip. They had great bars, cocktail lounges. They had entertainment. They had a showroom. They had a lounge show. They had everything you could possibly imagine. They brought junkets in, and junkets turned that business around and made it something that nobody else had. They bought their business from, you know, different cities, and they pleased people. They gave the customer what they wanted at the right price. They weren't cheap. You know, they didn't worry. If they were alive today and they saw that people charge for parking, they'd be laughing. They'd be laughing. What is wrong with you? I mean, there's a lot of operators, Ira, and I'm not by anywhere near a top operator. I'm just a guy that learned from some of the older guys that there's certain combinations of making a place work. Good food, good gambling, friendly service, and good entertainment. And that's what brings customers. And if they're treated right, they'll come back and come back and come back.
Do you think that's totally lost, or do you think there's still a few out there, a few operations out there that hew to that line?
I think there's still a few. One of them, I'll just tell you off the top of my shoulder, top of my head, would be Michael Gaughan. He believes that way. He gives you good food. He gives you good service. He's an old timer, even though, you know, he's highly educated. People, you know, they talk to him, and he has a little bit of a speaking problem. And, you know, but you'd think he was just a local farmer. He's one of the smartest guys in the business. So was his dad. I mean, that's one place. There's a few other places that adhere to that style, that old-fashioned style. I think Caesars has lost a little bit of it. I think most of them have, because they're all worried about counting money and worrying about this and worrying about that. But they worried about it and they lost money and the lost leaders and just understood that brought them business. Mm-hmm. Then they became successful. I mean, there's a lot of good local operators here. You know, Frank Fertitta Sr., who ran the Station Casinos, you know who he was, right? Fertitta.
Sure.
And he had the Bingo Palace to begin with.
Then it became Palace Station, yes.
So when I got fired at the Dunes Hotel by Morris Shanker, Frank Fertitta took my job in the Baccarat pit. He didn't have very much money. He was just a working guy. One of my friends who was in the Baccarat pit was friendly with him, and he asked him, why are you here in this position? He says, I'm just passing through. He was telling the truth, wasn't he?
He was. Hey, before I let you go, because we only have a few minutes left, let's talk a little bit about your meet and greet at the Casino Collectibles Association 31st Annual Casino Chip and Collectibles Show. That's a mouthful. June 13th through 15th. You're one of, as I mentioned, four that are going to be there. Do you know what you're going to be talking about? I know it's a meet and greet more informally, but people will get a chance to talk with you and find out what they want in terms of the background of the dunes or your background, which is always to me fascinating.
Well, I'm going to talk about the book a little bit. but I don't want to get hung up on. I'm not there to sell books. I just want to do my job and, you know, give them something that they'll be happy with. I'm being honest with you. It's all gratis. And I'm not getting paid for this in any way, shape, or form. But I want to set the record straight about a couple of things. One topic I want to bring up was an issue that was a plague to this town called the Chip Cup. The Chip Cup was a device that was used on a live game, generally craps. It was a hollow shell that a dealer would work with a partner playing the game. And he would take the hollow shell when the player would lose it and place it on top of the $100 chips, load it up with 3 to 4 chips. And then the guy would want change and he'd give him change for 100. And he'd count the nickel chips out. And they were like five. The shell was a $5 chip on top, a real one. And underneath it was a hollow shell. So it looked like a stack of $20. Okay. So right. the dealer would pick it up. And he'd load it onto the hundreds, and then immediately the guy would ask for change, or he'd pay a bet, and he'd get 4 chips, and under the chips would be 300 plus the real chip on top. So that was a scam that they never caught it. It was caught by accident. And the people who were involved with it are very interesting. One of them was the son of the founder of the Thunderbird Hotel, Marion Hicks, who was the founder, also was a partner downtown at the El Cortez, was one of the original owners, with Meyer Lansky. He was also a partner with Meyer Lansky at the Thunderbird. And then they built the Algiers, which had no gaming. The general manager of the Algiers was one of the gaming control board members when all this went on. And Johnny Hicks was the son, an adopted son of Marion Hicks. And he was my friend. And I never, and I'm not saying this to make myself look good, but I had no idea about the Chip Cup. He never mentioned it to me, never talked to me about it, but I'm going to talk about the details and what happened. It's a really interesting story.
And what's the future for Gina Minari? You've been doing so many different things over the years that we lost touch, but I was delighted that you were going to be speaking. And I said, we got to get Gina on to talk about his book and also this meet and greet. What's the future for Gina Minari? We have about a minute left.
Well, I've got a few things where I've worked on a little bit of a software program for casino sports betting. That's one issue. And the other issue is I just want to write more and create a historical website about gambling. That's about it. And, take it easy. I don't think I could work anymore in a casino. I don't think I could handle the hours. I have to take a nap during the daytime.
Yes, a nap is much more important than
it's time for your nap.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're in the Baccarat pit and we're dealing. My right is the guy by the name of Ronnie Steinman. I'm on the left side, and Ronnie's hustling this Jewish guy, old Jewish guy. And Ronnie's speaking Yiddish to him. A bissel for the kindle, a bissel for the kindle, a little bit for the kids, you know? And all of a sudden, the guy slams his chips on the table, gets mad, and walks towards the crap pit where Julie Weintraub, the junket master that he was on, is standing. All of a sudden, I said, Ronnie, we're in trouble. And I look up over my glasses, and there's Julie Weintraub looking at the Baccarat pit. And he's looking at the player and he's pointing to us. I said, we're in trouble. I'm sweating. He's sweating. And Sid Wyman, the big boss, just happens to come by to grab a Kleenex from where they're standing on the pit stand. And he heard what happened. He said, they what? And he screamed it. You could hear it through the whole casino. He come marching over like a parade. He had the player, Julie Weintraub, and he starts right in front of the Baccarat pit. All the players are on the table. The game's going on. And he starts screaming at us. You guys will never work in the state of Nevada. And I told you this. And another thing. And this went on for 5 minutes. So he leaves. The floor man on the game of the Baccarat, our bosses, won't speak to us. They're afraid they're in trouble too, because they're in on the tokes as well, the tips. So we know we're going to get fired. We walk to the time office. There's no pink slip. Following day, we come to work. No pink slip. My first break of the day, I'm going towards the dealer's room. I had to pass the elevator towers. It opens, and here's Sid Wyman walking directly to me. I can't avoid him. I got a bright red jacket on. I can't duck and turn around. And he walks by me, and I put my head down. He says, morning, son, and walked on, and I never heard another end of it. He did that for the player.
That's great.
That's the kind of a guys they were.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest is Bettina Minari, author of The Dunes Hotel and Casino, The Mob, The Connections, and Stories. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Gino, go to GinoMinari.com, GinoMinari.com, and Gino will participate in the meet and greet gaming education series, as I mentioned, at the Casino Collectibles Association's 31st Annual Casino Chip and Collectibles Show. Say that three times, June 13th through 15th at South Point Hotel and Casino. For more information about the show and the association, go to ccgtcc.com. That's ccgtcc.com. Great website. Wow. Gino, thanks for being on the show.
Don't forget my Gino spelled with an E.
That's right. G-E-N-O-M-U-N.
A-R-I.
A-R-I.
We Ira, got it. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
You got it. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world.